the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
And this is episode 222. I don't know episode. Should we just call it that?
I don't know.
All right. We don't know the name title?
We completely. We only know the episode number. That's all we got. And then we just went out. Tony made us live. So this is the I don't know episode.
All right.
But it's a special one because we have a guest.
That's right. Tom, you want to introduce?
I have our friend Phil with us, who is way more Linuxy than me.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah, Phil does, well, you can probably describe better what you do, like more DevOps, Linux stuff, like it's your day job and only job.
Yes, it is. So I am a system administrator at heart, and I happen to get paid for it.
Yes.
It's my hobby both at work and at home.
That's the best way to do it.
And if you've heard his name before, and I've mentioned it, it's because he helped me write the Shredder Pi project. So he is the genius behind the code that destroys hard drives at my office.
Nice. Very cool.
So what have you done for the last couple of weeks, Tony?
I've been trying to set up a pfSense box, and it keeps on breaking on me. So it's an old PC, but I got a server 4 gigabit NIC card, you know, PCIe card I put in it. And every time I turn all the links up, it just crashes my pfSense box. So I don't know what's going on there. It's probably a driver problem, but...
it's an Intel net card?
It's a good question. I never really looked at it. The name of the NIC when it comes up on pfSense is EM. So EM0, EM1, EM2.
That's going to be a FreeBSD thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just an interface name. That's okay. It's probably Broadcom that's giving you problems.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you're not using an Intel, that actually could be. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to throw it out there. Don't use Broadcom are trouble for wireless, and they're mediocre for...
All right. Well, I knew in I thought in FreeBSD that they used the name of the driver as the name of the NIC or related to it. So I figured the name of the driver would have been related to the manufacturer.
But I don't know.
I'll have to pull it out and actually read up on it.
I'm a pfSense guy, and I can't answer that question honestly.
Right. But what's interesting, if I have I have it plugged into a managed switch. I have a Cisco 3750 that I have it running on. And whenever I can go in to the switch and shut down all the ports, and the box will boot up fine. And the onboard NIC I have set as what I call the management NIC, but it's just LAN for pfSense, the LAN. And I can get into the management and I can look at it. And then if I turn up any of the four ports on the switch, within a minute, the switch shows it's fine. But then I look over at the box, and I can't get to it anymore. And I have a monitor running on it because it's just an old PC. And all the text just goes all wonky. It's like parts of the menu is now to the right, and then another part that was above it is now off to the top left, and another part it just goes all over the place and completely hangs up. I can't do anything on it at that point.
Weird.
So I just have to physically hard power it off.
Now, that's something I've never even seen is the menu get goofed up. I mean, it's just a text menu that sits on the screen with pfSense on the console. So that is really weird.
Are you running the latest stable pfSense?
I am. I downloaded it and burnt it to a flash drive and tried to do it. And I mean, it installs fine. I did a reinstall, thought maybe files got corrupt on the hard drive or something. And so I wiped it and reinstalled and still is doing the same thing. So, I don't know. I'm going to assume it's something with the NIC.
Yeah, I'd order an Intel. Like if you go to the NetGate website, because they sell like the four NICs there, a little more expensive to buy new, of course, but they're always Intel ones. So, go to find out the model number. I paste it into eBay, and get the one I want.
Okay, I try and look for the cheapest way. So, yeah, eBay would be a good one to look at.
That's because I need another one myself. I'm building out our network differently at my office, I think. I'm going to add – I only have three network cards in it, but they're three separate network cards. Mm. And so I'm going to get one of the Intel 4 cards and replace my pfSense box, and I want a fourth network for testing.
All right, yeah.
Because we want to troll the – scammers, and we want it on a completely – right now I set it up as a separate virtual machine and a separate network inside the virtual machine. Mm-hmm. But I want to just put it on a separate network completely, like just dedicate it.
Yeah.
That way, just in case they figure something out, I don't want them to have any visibility in our network.
All right. Yeah, that's a good way. So, Tom, what have you been doing?
Well, not Linux-y stuff, unfortunately, because, you know, my car broke and the bolt came out of my alternator and fun things that I normally
that's
would
take. Bad thing.
It's usually a bad thing.
It does it by itself. If you take it out, then.
Yeah. It just backed out a little bit and then rusted there and then became a project to get out and, you know, transverse engines and not enough room. So now I've got busted knuckles, but. Nice. I was determined to fix it. Wife's like, why don't you take it in? I'm like, no, just because you said that, it's going to be repaired in the driveway.
Ah, yeah. Man versus machine.
Man versus machine.
It's just one bolt. Come on. You even have to bolt. Cut it off.
Yeah. So after modifying the car with zip ties and brackets now, it's working. So that part's done. I did not – I was want to do a couple distros. Like I really want to try the new Neon distro, the KDE Neon. It really looks awesome. And everything came up in between. I hired a new guy, which is wonderful. But that means I have to bequeath all my knowledge upon him, which takes up now more of my time and I had less time to do things.
Yeah.
And then clients that create emergencies, that's the unpredictability of working in IT. Clients just do horrible things and just get owned and – we have to clean up their networks and clean up Crypto Locker on some more computers and restore from the only backup that we did 90 days ago, and they never did one since. So, yeah, 89 days was the exact number of days that they we set it up. They did the backup themselves the day after they got the computer.
No way.
And they never did it since because they didn't. I tried to talk them into signing up for a service. That didn't happen. and then another friend. I don't know the details, he said the server rack fell down, went boom, and then he had sent me some hard drives. Now, unfortunately, it went boom and took out the old servers. They are physically no more, as I understand it.
Wow.
So he took the drives out and said, can I get any data off of them? Because the company that was hosting the whatever company this was in also thought they had backups, and they didn't.
Oh.
So when it fell down, went boom. I have a feeling the backups that they had were probably in the boom. This is actually a data center. I don't know any of the details. I just know they're at my office. But that's why I had to get from you, and because you know who I'm talking about. I don't want to say his name.
SCA adapter.
The SCA adapters, because these are really old SCSI drives. So then Linux, because it does recognize the SCA stuff and the old 50-pin SCSI. My other employees being younger don't recognize 50-pin SCSI. So they're like, what's that? So they're like watching me take things apart. And I'm like, that's like a really big IDE cable. I'm like, yes, that's exactly it. So then you have to set the jumpers to set the ID and then the spindle sync, which I had to dig for jumpers because I'm like, oh, yeah, they're not on motherboards anymore. So I had to go dig around our boxes to find jumpers.
Oh, I didn't think about that when I gave it to you.
Well, I have them. We keep old stuff and that's what's on the top shelf. So I just had to get up on a ladder and get the boxes off the top shelf because I'm not using 50-pin IDE cables every day. So unfortunately, they appear to be a striped array and I can't get the data. But I do have all four drives and the labels for which stripes they were set up on. So I messaged that I can take it to a data recovery place. I'm like,
well, can you just DD the whole drive, the physical drive, onto like an image?
Maybe.
I wonder if you could take that image and VirtualBox and make it a RAID.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
That'd be interesting.
It goes beyond the scope because I had trouble getting them to detect either.
Oh,
the drives would spin up when it went to do detection, but it wouldn't read the drive. I couldn't see the file system on the drive, so I couldn't DD it. So I was like, I just said, this is – and it's old SCA, and it's like, look, I could order – I have a SCSI card. I could order another SCSI card to try another one to see if it does something better. But I'm like, yeah, these drives are like over like 13 years old. So I'm like, data recovery people.
Yeah,
there's actually a local data recovery place, and we've used them a few times. They have a lab, they have a clean room, and they have tons of old RAID array systems because people bring them in. I met them because several years ago, an accounting firm had a RAID array, and they thought, you don't need backups with a RAID array. That's what their other IT moron told them.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And a RAID array, this is what's weird. The hard drives physically were fine, but the RAID array went boop and just didn't work anymore. Like, all the data was scrambled.
Really?
It was scrambled. Like, I could see the drives, but everything was in a scrambled manner. They were able to fix it. It cost them $7,000, but they got all of the data back. It was great. So all
right.
After that, I've earned the trust of those people, and we use them all the time. Because we actually have a photographer who comes to us three times. She's paid for recovery.
Really?
Three. Wow. She's lost weddings three times by dropping hard drives. Never backs up. We can't talk her into a backup. We can't talk her into it. Now she's spent – it's a grand each time. So, because recovering single drives is about $1,000.
Tell her carbonate.
We've suggested everything. We suggested like not dropping hard drives too. So. No luck there.
Yeah.
But no, other than that, I have to work too much. But now that I got a new guy, I'm so happy because like I've delegated so many things to him in 1 week.
Nice.
So what's next?
All right, Phil, you have any projects going on that you want to mention? Yeah. Or you don't have to.
So at my house, I'm starting to get into woodworking. That's really fun, using my hands, being active in my garage. It takes my mind off of my day-to-day job for a little while. So that way when I come back to it, I've got a clear mind, clear eyes. I enjoy the relaxation part.
Yeah.
That's one of the, that's actually why I ride my motorcycle and some things like that. It's like it's completely – you have to focus on a completely separate thing. It's a different skill set. It's like just do something different.
Right.
But as far as actual Linux projects, thanks to Tom, I got into pfSense. So I have a pfSense box that sits as a firewall on my network, runs Snort, it runs Squid. I have a VPN into my house, so when I'm away from home, I can watch my cats through webcams.
That's important.
And yesterday, my wife finally told me again for the 100th time that hey, we need a place to store all of our movies and music. So I'm researching
Plex
gear to build a NAS.
Yeah,
all right,
and run Plex. Me and Tony run it. We love it.
That's what I'm going to run because that's what she's looked up and has demanded.
All right.
I won't lie. After using Plex, I mean, my wife, my kids, all of us use it because we load the app on the phone, and as long as we're on the network, it casts all the Chromecasts. So I have a Plex server, and we just load all the movies on it, and the kids just watch whatever they want, and so does the wife. It's super – like non-technical people have no problem using it too.
Yeah, especially through the app works just like Netflix.
Yeah.
You know, you can search for whatever in the title or the artist or the, you know, any of the tags. And you don't have to tag it yourself. You know, it automatically does all the indexing.
Yeah. And it does the movie art. It downloads and puts the movie art on there. I mean, it's just, I can't say enough good things about Plex. Like, it's awesome.
Well, Plex salesman, you guys have sold me.
Oh, by the way, it's free.
Yeah.
You can pay for it. What do you get with the enhanced one? I've been planning on giving them money.
You can share your library with other people. You can, you get a SSL connection through their app back to your house. You have to open up a port on your firewall. But other than that, you get the latest updates where
that's right.
Everybody else will have to wait, I think, 6 months before it's available for the free version.
But yeah, they're not much money if you. And I like supporting projects.
So. And the Android app is free for the if you have Plex Pass. That's what they call it.
Yep.
Where otherwise you have to pay $5 for the app.
I did.
Oh, okay. I paid for the Plex Pass. I love it.
I don't know. I just seen it and I bought it. I'm like, this works so well. It's a Subway sandwich, you know.
All right.
We want to hear from you. Call 734-258-7009 or email show@smlr.us with your feedback and questions.
So we have listener feedback
from Robert.
Robert, okay.
Yeah, the one email for the last 2 weeks.
One email, yeah. And anyways, Robert, we had talked about – someone did a really maybe you've seen this, Phil – a breakdown of all the different Linux distros. He loaded it, used it for a minute, and then measured the memory usage of that standing still. It was a great post on Reddit. I linked to it in our show notes last time. And it turned out Unity was the bigger than KDE as a memory hog, which I thought was actually surprising. Not substantial, but
that surprises me too.
Yeah, I just expected Unity to be smaller. And, of course, things like LFCE and some of the other ones are super low on the memory side. But he broke it down, even the same desktops with different distros. So
you mean LXDE?
LXDE, I'm sorry, LXDE. Yeah. Nonetheless, he actually said you can turn off, and I Googled this, and I have not tried it because I didn't just run into it. The listener feedback is, I'll read it word for word. Long-time listener, first time contacting you, love the show. Tom, before you drop Unity because of the baby RAM usage, consider removing Evolution Data Server if you don't use the online accounts. The one service that uses 300 megs on my machine by itself. So the Evolution Data Server, I did find out, at least because from a quick search in the forums, if you apt-get remove Evolution Data Service, it will also make GNOME quit working and Unity quit working. You can't log in. There's really? A bunch of people apparently that did that because they're – but you can stop the service, but mm-hmm. don't uninstall it because it breaks things.
Oh, wow.
So I did – at least I didn't try this myself. I'm just going by forum posts of what do I do now? Someone suggests I remove this and they apt-get purged it and –
oh man!
And bad things happen. So I guess stopping the service stops things and frees up memory, but removing it because it's whatever libraries it loads, the other things are dependent on.
Yeah.
So, but apparently it is. It does save memory, and that's why some people just thought I'll just purge this thing that's using memory that I don't really use.
Right.
It does break the calendar features and a couple other things inside of Unity if you use any of those too.
Yeah.
So it's not just the online apps. I guess it also is what drives the calendar and it makes it go away.
That makes sense. I actually use Evolution, so I don't. I just leave it running.
Yeah.
I mean, I use Mint, but it's pretty much the same thing.
Memory's cheap. I stick a lot of memory in my laptop.
Exactly. So. Yeah, my current laptop has 16 gigs, so
yeah.
I'm not worried about 300 megs.
Yeah, so it's not a big deal. But I still was thinking about it, because I'm just looking for an excuse to switch to KDE, because I love the KDE interface. So, and I didn't switch to it yet, but I want to try it.
You know what, actually? I'm probably going to be taking my old netbook with me when I go on my trip to Italy. And I'll have to look on there to see if that service is running because it only has, I think, a gig of RAM.
Oh.
So I'll have
You're
to make sure.
You're not taking your big laptop? Got to pack light? No.
Yeah, I got to pack light. And I was told that backpacks are prime for snatchers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So you don't
you
want
to just
expensive.
Walking down the street and somebody will ride by on a bike and grab things off your shoulder. And
they like tourists. So,
yeah.
Our other feedback was from Hacker Tony. With all kinds of script in it, and I believe that might have been our Tony Bemis checking to see if we're vulnerable to the PHP mailer.
Yeah, that was me. It made me think about the that vulnerability we talked about in the last episode about the PHP mailer. And I went back to the website that we read off of, you know, that was the released the info. The what is that? Colleen Lawyer Law Hack.
Oh, yeah,
hack
yeah.
For Law or something.
Law, the Hack Lawyers. Yeah, it's in our show notes.
Yeah.
But we'll have to refer back to our show notes. But
so
it's a group of lawyer hackers. It's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
They're the ones that actually discovered the vulnerability.
Huh.
Yeah.
And then they had a proof of concept video. So I was watching the video, and they went through and showed.
They show you how to do it.
You can either have a script that runs, and then you can get shell access right onto the server, the web server. Or they show you how you can manually do it. And so when I was trying to do it manual, and our web form strips out code.
We sanitize. So hackers, you can give up now.
That's right.
It's not a challenge to find. We probably have some other vulnerability. We don't have that one.
That's right.
Because we didn't hire Phil to secure our site.
Yeah. So I tried it in two different ways, and it still didn't work. So I think we're safe.
And that's all we have for listener feedback.
Yeah.
Might be partly Tom's fault because I didn't post the show immediately. I got busy. It is posted, but it isn't.
I'm not taking classes this semester, so if you want, I can take over the editing.
I'll show you the new editing process.
All right. All right, going on.
Distro Fever, where we cover the latest hot distro releases and news.
All right.
So new stuff on DistroWatch.
What's new on DistroWatch? Well, there is the new Red Hat. If you're a Red Hat guy. So there's a, what is it, 6.9, yeah. And you said you're running 7, Phil?
Yes. I cut my teeth on Red Hat 4 and 5. I worked during my time at a data center. We primarily used Red Hat 6. And now I'm a CentOS guy. I run 7 everywhere I can.
All right.
Just the environment you're familiar with. There is also...
So the 6.9 is just an update on the 6 series, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a beta on the 6 series.
Yeah, it's still in beta right now, right? That's what DistroWatch is showing me, that it's still in beta.
Yeah.
6.9.
There is a new version of Parted Magic, and that's something we've used a lot at the shop because when partitions get weird. So one of the things Windows does when it tries to install, and of course, as we spend all days fixing Windows computers, when it tries to install, it will look at the partitions and go, I don't know what this is, so I'm just going to lock up right here for you. Mm-hmm. And We a lot of times will boot off of Parted Magic, but they added full into the kernel ZFS support with Parted Magic.
Really?
Which is kind of cool. And I haven't updated Linux. I actually, one of my fun things I did was brick a installation of pfSense for a client. Mm. An accident Saturday morning. But when I ran it back to my office, because good news, he was close to my office, I used the tool just to – I don't know if you know how the NanoBSD uses slices, and it updates the other slice, but it didn't set the other slice to bootable, and so it bricked. So all I had to do was a little part of magic, and because it understands ZFS, I just set the other partition to bootable, and it works, and everyone's happy now.
All right.
So – but yes, there's a new version of that out there, which having ZFS support is good because we're seeing – that, and I think remember Ubuntu, the developers are liking it over ButterFS, even though it's a big project supported by Ubuntu with ButterFS.
Mm-hmm.
We may see more ZFS.
Yeah, I've heard that ZFS definitely is better.
It is a storage admin's dream.
Yes.
Yeah.
I for one welcome our ZFS overlords.
Yes, me too. And actually, the guy who wrote the book on ZFS is a show friend of ours. We reviewed his books. Mike Lucas.
Yep.
Yes. He's wrote two books on ZFS, and I've been to his talk. It's amazing.
That's awesome.
Yes. He spoke at last PenguinCon.
Yeah.
He literally wrote the book on ZFS.
Yeah.
What else do we have on here? I think it's because of the holiday. We don't have a ton of distro releases at the first of the year. Like, there's just not a...
There's a Solus release.
Oh, that's right. Solus has a new one.
Netrunner. I don't know, but I don't have anything like specific to talk about them.
Yeah, they're all like little maintenance releases and security updates. Nothing groundbreaking.
Right.
I want a new version of a big major thing.
All right. I guess without Mary here to tell us all about her research into each of the distros.
I know. We rely on her for that. Right. She reads this way more detail than we do.
Yeah, it's kind of a short
short distro watch. All right.
So going on.
Tech news and views.
So, Tom, what did you find for the last few weeks?
I got news. This was kind of a neat project. The Tabby Evo, an open source hardware platform to develop electric vehicles and electric vehicle parts. I found it saying it kind of looks like a golf cart thing. But with all the buzz going around, and even at the CES, there was a lot of talk about the self-driving car systems. And that's something that I'm really, really hoping stays in the open source realm. I want to know how the cars are coded. Who's it going to kill? Who's deciding? Like, whose life gets to live? This should all be open source. And so there's a whole open source platform for which you can do this. And, of course, there's the famous what's his name? The guy who hacked Sony that made himself famous. But he built the self-driving car with Ubuntu. What's his name? He started up a company with it.
Hmm.
He was in the show notes before. Anyways, he's been really driving a lot of this and driving the open source cars, driving the open source projects. So I thought that was pretty cool.
You said it was Tabby.
It's Tabby Evo, the Tabby Evo open source car project, which is kind of neat because we've seen open source gardening. It's a $12,000. It's like a golf cart, I guess you could describe it, but it's basically made so you can start playing open source and cars. So nice. Pretty neat. This is something that made me happy. The new Dells, $100 less if you buy it with Ubuntu. That has bothered me. See, I bought this Lenovo because I wanted to run Linux. I knew it ran Linux, but I still bought a Windows license with it because there's not a way to remove it. And the way Windows 10 works, because they embed the license in the BIOS, it's not like just a sticker anymore, so they can't just say, oh, it just won't put the sticker on it. So Dell actually is offering $100 less when you buy their higher end, their Dell Precision, like their business ones, but they have a Linux option. But apparently it also gives you a warning when you choose Linux that will not be compatible with the productivity software, and it grays out like your purchase of Microsoft Office because they want to try and sell you Office at the same time usually, like down when you're in the software. So when you choose Ubuntu, it grays it out, but it has like a warning thing, like yellow, like this is not compatible with productivity software.
Right. And, you would think that it would be smart enough to go down and disable that stuff at the bottom.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of weird because I guess they still try to sell you a license. Secondly, you could buy the web version and set up a subscription, but who wants Microsoft subscriptions?
speaking of the Tabby Evo, did you guys hear about yesterday, I believe it was, there's a French auto manufacturer that is using two Raspberry Pis for the computer in a car.
Really?
Yes.
Doesn't seem powerful enough.
Mm. Renault.
Oh, I've heard of them. I had one. I owned one of those French cars. Yeah, I had to scrap it because I couldn't get parts.
I posted the link in IRC if anybody wants to check it out later.
Okay, cool.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah, Raspberry Pi cars. I like that.
The car, they call it the POM, the platform.
Yeah, something like
based
that.
Based on Twizy, T-W-I-Z-Y, huh?
It's just awesome. Like, pretty soon we're going to be able to, like, cool, let's just, you know, Geohot, that's the hacker's name. Yes, I knew it was on top of my tongue.
That's the guy who hacked all the
Sony's
iPhone stuff.
And iPhones and everything. The guy's, he's certifiable. I mean, he's a genius. The guy just has some stuff. And he has an epic rap about winning.
Is that the guy that the FBI went to? He's better than the FBI.
He probably is.
To hack the iPhone.
He's really off the wall. Huh. He cut apart his Acura to turn it into a self-driving car because Acura has the auto park feature, so it has a thing that can control the steering wheel. That's why he chose an Acura. Like, not any other reason. Of course, he had one too. That was the other reason. But he just rewired. I mean, the guy didn't like have to invent things. He's like, I just rewired my Acura and I put an Ubuntu laptop in there. And he made a statement that probably went unnoticed when the news was interviewing him for the self-driving car, but he had a 21-inch screen in the middle that he had set up for the display, and he made a comment. He goes, Elon Musk only uses a 17. So I went 21 because this makes my car better. And then he made some comment. I did it without a team of engineers. I just wrote the code. Then I don't know if he was joking or not, but when they was driving, it was so funny because the news people in the car, and he said, so have you tested this before? He goes, I am right now.
Wow.
First test ride. Yeah, there's a lot of development going in that, and I think that's we're going to keep seeing that. I personally welcome self-driving cars because people are bad at driving, horrible at it, and I don't like doing it, mostly because of people. And I'd rather play on my phone than drive it anyway. So there's also my other, like, just take me places. Or when I can just tell the car, kid, drop the kids off at school, car. I don't want to go outside.
Yeah. I completely subscribe to the idea that people are going to stop owning cars at that point and driving, and then all you say is
it's car as a service.
I want a car, yeah, and it comes to you. You don't have to, you know, the
It will probably be car as a service like that, which would be an interesting concept because you don't need to have it. You just pay a monthly fee or you pay per ride, whatever the work, however that works out.
Something like that is actually starting to happen.
Zipcar.
You are able to rent a car for a month. So let's say you want to rent, I forget the manufacturer that's starting this, but let's say you wanted to rent a Lexus, if Lexus was doing that. Well, you could get a very nice fancy car for something like $1,500 a month, and then the next month you could get a different model. Mm. I'm not too sure. I'm not too into that, but who knows? I lease a car now, so.
Yeah. It could be interesting. So we don't own anything anymore.
That's true.
Nothing's physical. Moving on. Tanu Kaskinen. I have a hard time saying his name. I don't like mispronouncing people's names, but it does happen. But he is the most active maintainer of the Pulse Audio project, and he has left his day job to focus on advancing the project, and he set up a Patreon so people can help. Awesome. Apparently, he has wrote most of the Pulse Audio, and he comments on his Patreon. He goes, I'm living off my savings, which is not a sustainable option. But he really wants to become a full-time co-contributor and hoping some people will sign up on Patreon to do that. Apparently, the guy's done quite a lot of work on Pulse Audio, and I know it works well and it doesn't have problems. So I think I'm going to throw some money at the guy.
Yeah.
Keep it not having problems.
Right. I want to say all of the Debian-based distros, you know, Ubuntu,
all use Mint, Pulse.
They all use Pulse Audio.
Yeah, because Jack and things like that are just such a pain to use, as you know.
Right, so, and also is kind of waning.
Yeah, also support is waning. I really haven't had a sound problem, and I was thinking about that. Someone called about a sound problem on Linux. They called us. I was apparently the fifth computer store they talked to, and they said that no one else knew what Linux was, and they said, "Wow, I can't believe you're the first guy that knows what Linux is." I'm like, "Why, are you a Linux guy?" He goes, "No, I'm a roofer, but I don't like Windows. I think it's stupid." He goes, "But I can't believe that none of you guys, like, I'm a roofer that knows Linux, and I can't find another computer store." And even the last one he called actually referred me because they know me. They're like, "Oh yeah, he's like likes Linux and stuff."
All right.
So, and that's what he has is an audio problem. with that. He connects some type of external equipment, so I'm actually going there Monday to go fix it. He's a musician, and he produces with Linux.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So this was Mac shares fall to a 5-year low, and Linux is on the rise.
Sweet.
Yes.
It's going to be the year of the distro.
It's the Linux the desktop. Yes. Every year. We're at like the 2.3% mark now, but Mac is losing it. Apparently, the sales have been really bad. I even see another article. They had a clickbaity title that the Apple team shorted Tim Cook's pay. They actually didn't, but he did not receive his bonus because Mac did not perform as well as they thought. So they didn't short his pay. There was goals set. They didn't meet them, which is actually unusual for Apple. They're generally a company that sets out, meets goals, and exceeds them. But, you know, besides having that cool little bar on the new Mac, it's been really lackluster. A lot of people don't like the escape key on there. So this is only giving more rise to the Linux lovers.
Yeah.
My wife just got one of those new Macs for her job. And I really, really want to compile Doom to play in the little taskbar.
That's the only thing I like about it is the fact that you can run Doom on the taskbar. I thought that was great. So,
And they have that taskbar you're talking about is that little touch thing, right?
Yes.
They don't have touch screens for the Macs.
It's very weird. So for a person who likes to keep their pinky over the escape is now on that touch bar, and it's not always there.
Oh, right. No. Someone said there's a way you can set it to be always there. And they also had to have a release update for the Mac right away when they released the touch bar because you know how it does like the suggested word thing? It would apparently suggest passwords too. It would put your passwords in clear. So it would have them displayed in there while you're typing. It didn't realize password fields shouldn't be something that show up on that bar.
Wow.
So that was in an early release of it. I think like only the very first people that got it, they had an update right away that cleared that issue up.
Wow.
Yeah. Because then if you're looking at them, you could see what they're typing. But if you type fast, it's harder. But if it's displayed on a little thing, I actually think in concept, though, I'd like to see that on a laptop or a keyboard. I think it'd be cool to have programmable buttons there. I'm not talking about removing my escape key because I use that too. We're all in Linux here. Right. We like that button. But actually having a dynamic bar that has touch on it that could display different things actually seems kind of cool. I don't know how much I'd use it, but it might be kind of novel for customizing and creating some macros. Like I can just macro and draw my own icons for it. So
yeah.
It reminds me of the Optimus Maximus keyboard, that $15 or $2,000 device. You could change every single key. You could put the whole entire color palette on it.
Those are cool.
Yeah. I wish I had that kind of disposable income.
Yeah. Right. I wish that most people buy them so we could just afford them. So Raspberry Pi smartphone. This was a neat project, and they made a smartphone out of a Raspberry Pi. And has a lot of the common features. But when you look at it, it looks like something that you would use to detonate something. So I have a feeling the TSA would not love it if you had this. But conceptually, it's pretty cool because you could run a smartphone in a very secure manner because you're on Linux on it. You can do what you want. And they shrunk it down. They used the really small Raspberry Pi. But apparently the idle wattage is a little bit higher than some of the standard phones. So it wouldn't necessarily have that super long battery life, but you'd have a super customizable phone because, well, you're running, you know, full Linux stack on a phone natively with interfacing with the phone. So you can – I guess he has it running phone and SMS apps. After that, it's just a full Linux distro. So.
Wow.
The picture that's on Hackaday for this – It's about half the size of a banana, so that's pretty tiny.
Yeah. It's still reasonably small. I mean, they use the small board and everything, but when you look at it, it's not polished enough that I think the TSA is going to let you carry that on a plane. Don't travel with it, but yeah. Really cool concept. New beta of the KDE Plasma desktop, and this is what has me so excited. So I've always loved the eye candy of KDE. And I watched a demo of it and the way the menus do and the way you can change themes. And it's one of those things I can't adequately put adjectives to describe it to our listeners. Go look at the demo of the new KDE Plasma. They have a YouTube video and whatnot. But they added a bunch of little features, updated task manager, keyboard shortcuts, quick launch, applet improvements, Breeze enhancements. The global menus have returned. Apparently they removed some of them before. They've returned all the global menus. The network configuration module, and much improved Wayland support. So there are all kinds of enhancements on that, which is pretty cool. My only reason I wasn't running it before and why I want to try it again was it wouldn't output consistently to a second screen, when with my laptop. When I plug it in, occasionally it would just actually freeze. The Windows Manager would lock up when I plugged in like a projector. So I do presentations. So I go to a presentation and plug in a projector, it would just lock up. Turns out it's inconsistent. It would lock up with only certain projectors or certain external monitors, but others it wouldn't. And it would hard lock the computer. But it would hard unlock. Like, you can't use anything, but as soon as you unplug it, it just returns to normal. And it, all the messages I went through, and went through forums, were basically said, it does that.
Oh,
nice. There was no one fixing it. The other thing I didn't look to see, because one of my other problems with my – I have a triple monitor set up at my desk, and they don't support a single wallpaper across three. You set each wallpaper independently, and their user – the development team refuses to make one single stretched wallpaper across three. Every one of them has to be independent. So I have to slice my wallpaper in three. That's annoying. I want a triple monitor wallpaper.
That seems like it would be very nice from just the user perspective.
I have, you know, it's three identical monitors, so I just created a Photoshop file that is the exact resolution. And now I change it once in a while, and I re-edit my Photoshop file, and it's exactly the resolution. I don't have to change three of them. minor detail.
Yeah.
I
want to go back to the PiPhone for a second.
Sure.
And this also went to a conversation we had earlier about my wife not listening to the show. She just messaged me saying, hey, we could use that Raspberry Pi when we're in Italy.
Really?
That Pi phone. So apparently she does listen.
No more talking about Christmas presents.
But yeah, that'd be really cool because you could use it when we're away.
I like that. That's one of the things about Google Fi is nice because it works overseas. It works everywhere. So
yeah.
I thought this is not exactly a talk on this subject. I just like the name. The Project Neon, upcoming incremental upgrade for Windows 10 design. Project Neon, where have we heard this project name before? Have we really used all of them? Like, Windows now has to borrow names that have been used, like KDE Neon. I mean, granted, they're not calling it KDE. They just call it Project Neon. But if I said Project Neon, you'd probably assume I'm talking about the KDE project. No, it's the code name for the new Windows 10 updated graphical interface.
Really?
Which really isn't that exciting. It's Windows 10. And even the people who are trying to review it said it's such an incremental – like, it's more bug fixes with Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think the last big code name they had, somebody else already had a patent on it, so they had to.
Yeah, that's happened.
So they had to change the name after all the.
Since they purchased Minecraft, something they've been doing is each version update, each major, like the anniversary update, was called Project Redstone, and they're all their naming schemas for all their enterprise has been all off of Minecraft block names. That's been their internal code names for all the releases lately.
Oh yeah,
which I think is kind of novel. At least, there's a lot. I know some of my kids play Minecraft. I've tried, and there's a lot to crafting those things. There are like hundreds of different blocks and ways you combine them. So Microsoft has a good resource that they can do it. But why they decided to call the Windows 10 graphical update Project Neon, I don't know. It just amused me somehow though.
Right.
And the clickbaity title, but it is correct. It's the MongoDB apocalypse. Apparently, and as we all know, no one reads the manual before they install it, and they will next and yes themselves into oblivion without hardening anything, and you can leave the admin password blank. And if I was reading through, I think it was a post on Reddit, apparently that even the first hackers that turned this crypto into over 10,000 servers, actually, I'm on the website, actually 28,000 servers have now been compromised that they've counted. And apparently the first round of hackers didn't secure the whole. So another round of hackers took over the first round of hackers stuff. So they kind of got – they pwned the first group. Basically, this is a heyday of everyone left the admin password blank. Turns out blank works for admin on MongoDB.
Nice. Now, why it deploys and it binds to the public interface, that's confusing as well. The first thing you should do with a database is just lock all that down. But then again, like you said – RTFM.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. But it's the tyranny of the default, right?
Tyranny of the default. If you don't have it default secure. So, I mean, I was talking to Tony, like when I do a review of some of the different software, if you load Ubuntu to test something and you try to type in, like when I'm setting up a demo box, I put password as a password, it gives me lots of warnings like, this is a bad idea. Check this box to confirm that you're an idiot and keep moving on.
Right.
You know, that's what it should do. Like, really, are you sure this is the way you wanted to configure this thing? Because this is a bad idea. And in MongoDB, the developers should have done this because they should have known nexting and yesing a database install and binding it to a public interface is horrible.
But, Tom, it's web scale.
It's web scale. Yes. So that's what I had for the news, Linux-wise. I could rant about all kinds of stuff. Oh, I forgot to bring this up. Netgear is being sued by the FTC. They're bringing basically for calling their products secure. They're getting them on basically false advertising because of all the recent security was so horrendously done. I don't know if you've seen this, Phil, but we talked about last time. When you go into a Netgear without logging in, it turns out you can actually just add CGI and the command into the string. Whatever you want, it runs at root level. So 192.168.1.1 and a couple – I forget the exact escape codes, and then CGI and bin and then the command, and it just runs it at full root level without logging into the router. You can actually – the best thing was the guy made a page to fix your Netgear router. And what it was it basically to kill all HTTPD. And so when you clicked it, it would just shut down until it was rebooted. It would shut down the HTTP server so it quit accepting any more commands. But it doesn't do any verification, no sanitation, and they have no fixes for it because they're all the older models. And so they're not really deploying fixes. They're like, yeah, they're not supported anymore. It's a couple years old.
I know plenty of places that still unfortunately run those devices.
Yeah, they're not externally accessible, so it's not like an external hack. But if anyone clicks a 192.168 link with the command in it, it can run whatever command right from their computer. And, of course, we talked about the new virus that attacks the router. It gets inside your computer and sends commands to the router, and it now recognizes it, fingerprints the router, and has 156 in its list. And it knows all the default admin passwords. And it actually, behind the scenes, logs into your router, opens up ports so they can do things with your router or any other devices on your network.
Changes the DNS point off to their own DNS.
Yep, it'll swap your DNS servers in the router and change them so you get new DNS servers that are pointing to where their attacks want you to go. So
yeah, exactly. So it looks legitimate. Like your web browser will show Facebook.com.
Yep.
But it's actually redirecting to their server, not the actual Facebook servers.
Yeah. So it's a mess. Yeah. It's a mess. So they actually do that. Our Federal Trade Commission got involved. One surprises me, but I love that it's false advertising by calling your product secure. Like, you guys did such a horrendous job that we're not tech people. But we realize that this is not actually a secure device.
Yeah.
Speaking of secure, though, PFSense underwent a code audit.
Oh, yes.
And they passed with flying colors.
Yes, awesome. That was exciting.
I'm very, very excited about that because I run PFSense at my company.
Yeah, and we deployed a lot of our clients. Matter of fact, I ordered the new, and it hasn't arrived yet, the new PFSense boxes, the two-port ones that are $150.
They're now x86 compatible.
Yes.
ARM compatible, yes.
I thought that was really awesome, and I want to review them because the only thing in that category that's full-featured has generally been the Unify products, the edge routers, which are nice. They're not as full-featured as a PFSense box, but they fit that high quality, gives you some features like bandwidth shaping, but still cost $99, but aren't some crappy all-in-one Netgear box. So, I'm excited to review that. So hopefully it'll be in next week.
Very cool.
We want to deploy with clients because generally before the cheapest PFSense boxes we deployed are like $400 to $500, plus our time to install them. So they were never an inexpensive product to deploy, but they're generally going in corporate offices. But these ones I can now put in small home offices instead of an edge router. They get all the benefits of PFSense without paying me $500. Which will be any time you can make security more affordable for clients, they're all happier. It's a win for everybody.
All right.
What do you got, Tony?
As I was saying before, I have the article about the proof concept for the PHP malware exploit.
Hacker Tony emails.
Right. So you can go through and actually watch how they did it. And they link off to their I'm pretty sure they link to the GitHub about for the actual scripts that they use.
You know, I like that, like the Dirty Cow guy, the video I had posted when that came out. He's the same – it's funny. The same guy who has the best explainer video that he did on how Dirty Cow works, like walks you through step-by-step coding it. He's the GitHub maintainer of the code. He's also the guy that owned the CTF and did the video about it too. The guy – I follow him on YouTube now because his videos are really technically detailed and really precise and very amusing when he owned the CTF server. So.
Awesome. Anyway, the next one I found and these – I've been watching Reddit. So this is like the first – like a few weeks I've been on Reddit, And
welcome.
But there's a NetSec. Yeah. And I found this one. It says exploiting misconfigured Apache servers, the server status instance with a script that he ran, that this guy made up. And his name is Mazen Ahmed. And what it does is a misconfigured Apache will show the server status, and that's every connection to the server, and it gives information about where the connection's coming from and the users and everything.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, so somebody can watch
Shodan?
Through
can
that.
Can you use it on Shodan?
I'm sure you can.
That sounds fun. I'll make a list.
Right. But I mean, it'll expose all URLs coming in and out of the server. So session tokens, like if you use the get request URI for the tokens, it'll show all of those. So that's, sessions that people are in thinking they're secure and somebody could easily hack into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
From a management perspective, server status is really, really nice. So you can see how many waiting connections you have, how many keep alives you've got open, that you're not exhausting all your min and max child. If you're running I think it's the event Apache MPM.
But you probably shouldn't have it public facing.
No, absolutely not. Please put a location block around that for a local host.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so he wrote a script that will go through and read through it and then parse it out so it's a nice, easy to read.
Oh, nice. Right. Is it on GitHub or is it just in Reddit?
He has a blog. It's on mezenmed.net.
It'll be in the show notes.
Yeah, it's in the show notes. And then he has a GitHub also, which takes you over to, it's called server-status_PWN is the project. Yeah. And so I went through and checked out my servers that I run, and yeah, they're all not vulnerable to this.
Oh, good.
So we're good. Yeah.
Phil configured my one Apache server, so I'm going to hope it's not vulnerable.
Well,
he's making a face.
I don't believe that we're loading server status on that, but always worth it to go back. Trust but verify.
Yeah, trust but verify. Exactly. I trust Phil, but I'll verify Phil. We'll go with that.
Yeah.
It's just behind a firewall. What port does it have to access?
It's your web server.
Oh, so
port 80 or 443.
Okay, so it's a query that goes over the port 80 or 443. Okay.
Yeah, and it exposes that information for HTTP or HTTPS.
Oh, cool.
So people are in HTTPS, they think they're secure, but it's possible, if this could be leaking information.
I'll have to go to shodan.io and see if...
server-status.
Something else they can add to their thing.
Right. And then one more I found was Google published their infrastructure security design overview.
Ooh.
And it's an interesting read. I had always assumed that Google always just kept everything by default. They just kept everything, never deleted anything. And they actually have a policy to delete information from users. The user account is closed.
Oh, okay.
Or removed.
If you delete a Gmail.
Right. Well, it says Google user or end user in this. So I'm not clear whether it's a Gmail account or whether it's a Google employee. So it doesn't really make specification on that. But I just thought it was interesting. A lot of the other stuff is basic security stuff. They go through and say these are our policies and this is how we run about it. And they encryption at rest, deleting of data, login abuse protection. I mean, it's all the stuff that we know.
Yeah.
It's just for them to lay it out in a policy is nice. And this kind of thing is really what my degree, I'm getting my master's in information assurance. And a lot of it, like half the degree, is all on policies and procedures. So reading through this is really up my alley, what I've been studying.
No, that is actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
So as Bruce Schneier said, amateurs hack systems, professionals hack people. So policy has a lot to do with security.
Exactly.
Google actually has a way to download all your information. So everything that they're keeping about your Gmail account, your Hangouts, you can go into their admin panel, download it all, or just completely wipe it. But I'm glad that they actually do delete that stuff after a given time.
Yeah. They've always had a strong data liberation policy to export data out, which I've always thought was cool about Google. I forgot that they have some of that. And oddly, this is because I wanted to win an argument with my wife. we argue on Facebook, and we just back and forth messages, and I was looking for a message, and I'm like, oh, it's kind of a pain to search. But I said, oh, that's right. You can export Facebook, all of it. So I did export Facebook, and it's really kind of cool. I'd never done it before. And now I have all of our conversations going back years because it's kind of novel. But they have that policy too. They create an internal static web page. It's all just HTML links, but you can go through all your old messages, all your photos, everything you ever uploaded to Facebook is on there, your entire Facebook wall.
Wow.
And I use it to search, and then I was using some contextual search tools in Linux to get word counts and count how many times she'd asked a certain question or something. So I was looking for a phrase, and I was grepping through all of it. But you can do that.
That's cool.
I guess it was kind of a project. You were determined to win an argument.
I just Googled it. It says, how can I download my information from Facebook?
Yeah, it's in the options. Go down there. You tell them to do it, and it takes a few hours, and then it sends you an email. It says your file's ready for download. It sends you a special link to download the file.
Cool. I will put the link, the how-to link into Facebook.
Pretty
or
easy.
Into our show notes.
It's kind of novel. Now I have a copy of Facebook.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, fit my Facebook. There's some things that we're missing, but it does have, it doesn't have everything people posted to my wall, and you lose everything you're tagged in, but it's still kind of novel.
Yeah.
Now, what else is cool, if I'm not mistaken, it has links, because like your wall post you did from 2012 is still there. It's just really hard for you to jump to a specific thing you said on a certain day. But when you find it in there, it has a way, if I'm not mistaken, you can click it and you can link back to that post exactly and then recomment on it and bump it to the top, which is fun. So,
oh, that's nice. I was trying to look for – because I think I saw you do that once.
I've done it a couple times.
How do I do that? I went looking because you can't reference another post.
Well, how I've done it is I turn on all notifications for Facebook and then I filter them. So I have – probably 40,000 emails from Facebook over the last few years, and because Gmail does such a great job indexing them and filtering them, because I don't want them in my inbox, they're filtered to their own folder. I then can go through there and do a contextual search for comments makes. Like if you commented on a post from 2012, I can look for Tony Bemis and give it a date range search, and I can find that comment someone made. And that actually started because of an argument on Facebook with my uncle, who loves to troll people. But when he gets called out wrong, because he's one of the people who believes a lot of fake news too. And so when he'll post something and he finds out it's fake, he'll delete it after he started the argument with it. And then he'll deny, because I said, I told him one time, like, you believe that was real like last year. I never believed that. And I'm like, no. And I'll send him the thing because it'll send me the Facebook notification, which angers him greatly.
Oh, that's good.
But that's why I started doing it. But it's actually been handy to find when people reference things and be able to pull that data up. I call it being like your own NSA. I spy on myself.
Yeah.
And it's part of my data hoarding obsession.
Yeah.
So I was going through old photos, and I'm like, wow, I have photos from the 90s that are digital. And it's like nothing fades. Like I look like that in the 90s, and it's not faded. I just don't have gray hair.
I think that's one of our downfalls, just humanity in general, not ever admitting that we can be wrong. But
that's true, too.
But we are every single day. And the only way you get better is, hey, admitting your faults and mistakes.
And I think that's where sysadmins actually deal. I generally find more willingness to admit we're wrong than sysadmin. Like, oh, I thought it was right to configure Apache this way. It was really not right. I really shouldn't expose that data. And I really should put a password on MongoDB. Because you'll find out, we all admit, I next and yested my way to oblivion. That's exactly how I wondering how I got in the situation. That's how.
Yeah.
We're willing to share that knowledge with you so you cannot get in that situation.
Exactly.
Oddly, none of my shenanigans playing with Linux ever led to me getting owned. It is by luck, not by smarts.
Oh, I've owned myself many, many times.
I broke many things. Like,
yep.
I've just never had anyone else like exploit dumb things Tom did.
Yeah.
Well, fair I did enough. Once. I forgot about a secondary Facebook account that had a simple password that got hacked.
Oh.
Yeah, that happened. Oddly, Facebook says, we don't think you logged in from Pakistan. And they sent me a notice. I'm like, well, I know I didn't. And I couldn't figure out. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it's not my main Facebook account. It's one I created a long time ago. I don't really care about it. But no, I didn't log in from Pakistan. They guessed my password, which is Thomas123.
Oh, well.
But the username wasn't Thomas. That's actually what struck me. It was actually a company one I'd set up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So somehow they get I was shocked they guessed the password, but I guess they use rainbow tables. And there's a rainbow table somewhere with Thomas123 in it.
There is now. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all I had.
All right.
Phil, did you have anything you want to talk about? Or?
Any particular news item?
No more news. Okay. I just like talking about setting up servers, securing servers, and shell scripting.
And that'll be awesome. Our next episode. Phil's going to walk us through in the Fresh Looks episode of how to secure stuff.
Yeah.
How to keep you from getting pwned and ending up on our news item list.
Yeah, really.
All right.
Remind me of posts and on Google Plus, I saw a post from Mary that the reason she's not here is she's out of town. At Myrtle Beach, I think.
Oh.
So she was already posting pictures of Myrtle Beach in January and
it's actually not
making me jealous.
Did you know, it's been a long time since I've been there, but you can get in January up until February because it only gets like 60 degrees or so there, so it's not real warm, but you can stay on the ocean. I remember it was like 120 for a hotel on the ocean.
Yeah.
It was like just next to nothing. My friend used to like to go every February, and I went with him one time. I'm like, why do you like to go to Myrtle Beach in February? And he's like, because I can sit on the ocean. He's I don't like being in the ocean. I just want to be on it. I just want to be on the ocean, not in the ocean. And, we each got our own hotel room. Like, you sleep with the doors open, listen to the ocean, like, right there. It was awesome.
That is cool.
Yeah. It's like, and it's cheap. It's like, that's all I paid.
Yeah.
And I got a continental breakfast.
I wonder if she's getting that ice storm. Oh. Wouldn't that be hysterical? Yeah. Well, there's a comment in the IRC that 5150, he says he got in, but he couldn't listen because he's stuck in town from the freezing rain overnight.
Oh,
I think, is that what he said? And he says that he expects the power to go out soon, too, because of the rain or the ice on the
power lines. They don't deal with it well down there. They really don't know how to deal with adverse weather.
No, they don't. He also says that all the Vienna sausage and cheap sardines are gone.
Oh.
So of all the things to stock up on, I guess it's those two.
Yes.
That's right.
As long as there's whiskey, I'm sure he'll be okay. Right. Yeah. We've hung out with him at the Linux stuff. He's a fun guy to drink with.
Oh, yeah.
He can outpace me, though, by a lot.
I think he can outpace anybody that I know.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun. I missed him. I wish I would have went to Ohio Linux Fix, but I'll go next time.
Yeah, it'll be good.
Come with us, Phil. We'll drag you down there with us at the Ohio Linux Fest. It's a great party.
It's in the fall. It's fall every year, and we hang out with a bunch of other podcasters. Yep. And
we have a podcast meet up there, and just we all go out to eat and hang out and just have a great time.
That sounds fantastic.
All Linux people, so.
Yeah.
Hacker Public Radio is there. Those,
Yeah. So. It's usually... 5150 coming at,
representing
HBR. And then
Dory and
Door.
Door. Yeah, Dory.
Yeah.
I said Dory. I did not mean to call him that. Dory.
From Podnuts.
Podnuts.
And quite a few of the Podnuts hosts and crew and guys that show up there. And it's just great to hang out. And that's one of them that you say the hallway track is better than half the talks.
Yeah. I mean, the talks are good, but the hallway track is great.
Yeah, hanging out with the people you know. You know, so.
All right, well then, on to the music.
Yeah.
The outgoing music for this week's show.
All right, so I did a random search for Linux in Jamando.
Cool.
And came up with this one. So the song's called Linux, and it's from Zudio. Zudio. Thank you. All right. So, hey, that's just about what I would have expected from a Linux song. It was probably created on Linux, too.
I hope so. I still like the Susie song we had last episode. Yeah,
that was really good.
Coding in the name. Oh, it's still, it's still in my head.
Yeah. All right. So,
I'm a big fan of the floppy drive music.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That is pretty cool.
That is good. All right. So you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 222.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Name it after Star Wars, the Rogue episode.
Yeah, the Rogue episode.
Oh, Rogue, yeah. So this is Tony Bemis.
Tom Lawrence.
Phil Parada.
All right. See you guys next time.
Yeah.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.